The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
But what I really love is the editing and the revision. And I would do that all day, every day, if I could, without actually creating any new words. So my rule to myself is that in every writing session, whether that's 10 minutes or whether it's a whole day, I'm only allowed to edit what I wrote in the previous session, and I must write some new words.
Greetings, scribes, and welcome back to The Writer Files. I'm your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and prosperity per usual. Award-winning novelist Claire Fuller talked to me about getting shortlisted for the 2021 Women's Prize for Fiction, what inspired her new novel, Unsettled Ground, and her creative process. Claire is an accomplished artist who studied sculpture at Winchester School of Art. She only started writing fiction at the age of 40 after many years working as a director at a marketing agency. She's now the author of four novels, including her award-winning debut, Our Endless Number Days, and her latest is Unsettled Ground, shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction. The book's described as a tale of sacrifice and hope, of homelessness and hardship, love and survival, and an unusual family held together by a string of lies and a sudden death that threatens to undo them all. In a starred review book list called Unsettled Ground, devastatingly haunting, Claire is also an award-winning short fiction writer and writing instructor. In this file, Claire and I discussed what inspired her to venture into fiction, how she constructs the beginnings of a novel, the slow, ponderous growth of her drafts, beta readers, and the importance of reading your work aloud, and why it doesn't get any easier. Stay calm and write on. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. Yes, we're back on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by a very special guest. I've got award-winning novelist and short story writer, Claire Fuller. How are you today, Claire?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it is a pleasure, and I can't wait to dig into all things writing with you. Yeah, you are across the pond. What's going on over there right now?
I am. We finally got some sunshine. We've had about 2 weeks of rain, literally all the time, 24 hours a day. Oh, that's what it feels like anyway.
Right.
But today the sun is out. I have been out, and I have been out to lunch for the first time for months and months and months. So I'm feeling very happy.
That's amazing. Yeah. Isn't that a strange, you know, we're speaking in 2021 towards the tail end of this pandemic that's kept us all cooped up. But yeah, it's a very, what's the word I'm looking? It's a strange feeling, right? It's kind of like a, what is that? It's a dissociative feeling, I think.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's very odd to be out in public.
Yeah. And yes, to be in a room with strangers feels odd. But you know, that's been a very long time. So yeah. But you all felt also very safe and very pleasant, and you know, wasn't worried at all. So
yeah,
had a good time. had some very nice food.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I can't wait to talk about Unsettled Ground, your latest novel. Of course, we'd love to dig into a little bit more about your superhero origin story as a writer, because I understand, you know, you've, of course, been an educator and, you know, worn some different hats as a writer and short story author. Tell us a little bit about kind of how you got here and what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, I think it is perhaps a little bit different from other writers, because I didn't ever intend to be a writer. It wasn't something that I thought about when I was younger, or, you know, some writers say they wanted to be a writer as soon as they could read. You know, that wasn't like that for me. I've always been a reader and always absolutely loved books and spent my childhood in libraries. We didn't have that many books at home, but I discovered libraries and would borrow the maximum number of books. So I read and read and read. And then when I was about 40, I was doing some art projects with my husband, because my first degree was in sculpture. And these were quite kind of public art projects. They weren't anything to do with sculpture, but we were following Miranda July's book, Learning to Love You More, where she encouraged people to go and do these odd little projects, some of which were completely out of my comfort zone. Things like have a one-person demonstration. So make a placard, go and stand somewhere and demonstrate. So me and my husband made this placard that said, less driving, more walking. And he went and stood in the middle of a four-lane highway while I took photographs and he held up the traffic. It was all very, very scary.
That's
and
hilarious.
Odd. The feeling of actually having done it afterwards, that we were on such a high, that was wonderful. And we did lots of these projects from this book. And by the end of it, I was kind of looking for something that gave me a similar feeling. And I discovered in my local library that they had a short story slam, which was an event where anybody could sign up, write a short story that had to last no longer than 5 minutes when you read it out to the audience, to a live audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I signed up. I wrote my first short story. The audience also voted on their winner. And I read it out. And it was a very bad short story. And I read it very badly. And of course, I didn't win. It was the first short story I'd ever written, you know. Well, I did a bit of creative writing at school when I was 16, but, you know, not for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
But this event happened every 6 weeks or so. And so I signed up again and I wrote another short story and again and again. And maybe, I can't remember how long it was, a year or two, I won. And then I decided, well, this is fun. Maybe I will sign up apply to do an MA in creative writing. And I got accepted onto that course. It was a part-time 2-year course.
Mm.
And I wrote my first novel on that course, Our Endless Numbered Days. And I thought, well, I've written this novel. I'll send it out to agents. I'll see what happens. You know, without thinking, I want to be a novelist.
Mm-hmm.
But I got an agent really quickly. And she loved it. And we did a few edits. And then she sent it out to publishers. And we got 3 offers. So it went to auction and Penguin won in the UK. This was all happening in the UK. And shortly after Penguin bought it, Tin House in the US bought it. And I found that I was an author, which was all very exciting and kind of odd. And then halfway through the second book, Swimming Lessons, I thought, I love to do this full time. So I gave up the day job and started writing full time. So that was kind of how it started, very unexpectedly, very excitingly.
Yeah.
And I've carried on from there.
It's an inspiring story. And yeah, I think your latest Unsettled Ground has gotten quite a bit of glowing praise and was recently shortlisted for the 2021 Women's Prize for Fiction. And we were talking a little bit about this, but what is that feeling like when you get that phone call?
Oh, it was, I think I screamed. My husband told me that I screamed. So I didn't remember screaming. And he ran up the stairs to see what was wrong. Well, and it was actually what was right. Yeah. It was very exciting and also completely unexpected. Because I've been following this prize as a reader for so long. You know, previously it was the Bayliss Prize, and before that it was the Orange Prize. And I have just discovered so many great books on the long list and the short list and as winners. So it was wonderful to be included in something that I've been following for so many years. And also, you know, great to have, to be judged, you know, amongst, by a few judges. To be worthy of getting on the shortlist is also obviously wonderful. And also, it obviously finds a lot more readers because it's on the shortlist. Yeah. Lots of people read the whole shortlist to work out which is their favorite book. So that's a really nice thing. You know, I've connected with a lot more people on Instagram and on Twitter who have read the novel. And I don't think they would have come across it without it being on the shortlist. So that's a lovely thing too.
Yeah, that's got to feel good. How does it feel to be in that company, and then do you read your peers' work? Are you reading other finalists and then do you compare? You know, do you get this feeling like where you're comparing or not?
I think you can't help but do that, and it's really difficult. And what it highlights, which I obviously know already, is that taste in novels is so subjective. You know, we don't all like the same thing, and you have a different panel of five judges. They're likely to pick a completely different shortlist. So it's lovely to be on it, but I do know it doesn't mean that my book is the best book amongst all the ones that they read. It suits their taste and it answers some things that they're looking for. And I am reading the others on the shortlist, but I'm kind of holding back from saying what I thought about them because that feels wrong somehow. Mm-hmm. So although on Instagram I often post the books I'm reading, I have a kind of Claire's Books at Breakfast post where I put a book on a plate and talk about the book. I've held back with the shortlist because that. It somehow doesn't seem right. I might well do it after the winner is announced. I might say what I think about them. But yeah.
That's cool.
But try and be honest, but also, you know, constructive or positive in some way. I think, you know, nearly all books, you can say something positive about them, certainly.
Oh, sure. Well, that's very diplomatic of you. And of course, you know, you want diplomacy in that kind of a setting because these are your peers and you'll be settled alongside each other for eternity now. But and just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join. To get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime, that's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, the breakfast books are very cool. I love this Instagram. Of course, I'll link to your home base there, which is clairefuller.com co.uk, and your Twitter and Instagram, where listeners can find out more about you, and they can look at your artwork there. There's some amazing sculpture work. Congratulations on those pieces. Look really, really time consuming.
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't done any sculpture for a very long time, because it feels like the writing provides my creative outlet, I mm-hmm. suppose. I haven't felt the urge particularly, but when I was sculpting, I was doing stone carving and wood carving. So yeah, they take a long time, definitely. And dusty work.
Yeah, they look a little dusty. But no, it's that kind of work has to be engaging your brain in a completely different way creatively. But do you find in the midst of a novel, if you're getting stuck or kind of reaching a place where the words aren't maybe flowing, do you have a hobby or some sort of a alternate, are you picking up a sketchbook? Do you have ways of kind of getting outside of your brain or outside of a story so that you can, kind of do some of that creative work in the background? How hobbies are quite important to creative folks, and especially deep thinkers and writers, I think.
Yeah. Well, I do lots of other things, but the thing that really helps when I am stuck with a piece of writing is reading other people's books. Mm-hmm. And there is something that happens in the subconscious for me that people say happen, other writers say happen for them, perhaps when they're walking or showering or whatever. But for me, it really happens when I'm reading, especially if I'm reading a really fantastic book that is beautifully written. Somehow, while I'm reading, ideas about my own fiction come to me, and they often aren't related to what I'm reading, but some connection works there. I don't even know how it works, but I have noticed over the years that really helps me get unstuck if I am stuck, and even more excuse to read then, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, writers have to be voracious readers, I think. But yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's fascinating, I think, kind of getting into your brain and your creative process. Talk a little bit about your latest, An Unsettled Ground, which I thought this nice blurb from Lauren Groff was cool. So sharply, so utterly brilliant that I found myself holding my breath while reading, dazzled by Fuller's mastery and precision. How does that feel? How does that blurb feel?
Wow. When that came through, that was an amazing moment too.
That's
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Lovely. Delighted, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, talk about Unsettled Ground and some of the maybe the spark of inspiration that birthed your latest novel.
Yeah, there was a spark of inspiration actually for it, and it was to do with place. So in the novel, there are 51-year-old twins who still live with their mother in rural isolation and poverty, and their mother dies, and they discover that she has lots of debts, and so they are evicted from their cottage, which they believed was theirs, and things spiral downhill from there, really. Mm-hmm. They life becomes very difficult for them. And somewhere in the middle of the novel, they end up in a very horrible caravan in the woods. And I think for a US market, you would probably call that a camper trailer. Mm-hmm. So it's a thing that's towed behind a vehicle that you take on holiday. And there are lots of those in the countryside in England. They get abandoned, or they're used by farmers or agricultural workers, and eventually they kind of fall into disrepair and become very disgusting. And my son found one in the woods not too far from where I live. This was while I was still just finishing Bitter Orange, my previous novel. And I hadn't really thought about what the next one was going to be, but he took me out to this caravan because he said, "It's so disgusting, Mum, you'll love it." Because he knows that I like kind of weird places and weird things. Mm-hmm. And we went out there, and he was absolutely right. It had been vandalized. The windows were smashed. It had become green from the leaves and from the creepers that were growing over it. The door was hanging off. It was very smelly, but it was also incredibly atmospheric, and somebody clearly had been living there at one time. And it just made me think, who had lived there, what had taken them there, because it was a long way even from a village. There was not even a track to it. It was literally in the woods. How had they managed, because there wasn't any sanitation, there wouldn't have been any power. Mm-hmm. And what would their life have been like after they left? Were they kind of on a downward journey, or maybe did things get better for them? And the character Jeannie was created in my mind. So she is the main character in Unsettled Ground. And that was the spark, really.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very interesting time in history to be exploring the idea of home and identity and displacement, because so many families, you know, I think especially during the pandemic, but also, you know, kind of as we talk about so often on this show, like the concentric circles of crises that still, you know, to this day, even without the pandemic, you know, we're facing climate change, historic change that's, you know, moving a lot of people, moving a lot of families. But then on top of that, you know, we also, with the advent of the internet, you know, there are no secrets any longer, right? And we've talked with author Dani Shapiro about her kind of her nonfiction about kind of family secrets and how secrets can't be kept any longer. But yeah, so there's a lot going on with that and this idea of place. And I love this camper that's fallen in disrepair had sparked this story that's gotten so much acclaim. So congratulations on the work.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think it's quite timely, probably for a lot of people, but you know, we have been dealing with a homeless epidemic here in the United States, which is just, you know, hard to believe given our kind of status in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same here. But what really makes the news, and also I think probably is written about in novels, is urban poverty and urban homelessness, and not so much rural. So it was something that really interested me, because there are people who have to survive, like Jeannie and Julius, you know, have very little access to technology, and in the rural environment are finding that the services are being cut, and, you know, they're if you don't have transport and there aren't any buses going to the nearest town, how do you get to the bank? How do you get to the hospital? How do you move around if you are very limited and you have limited resources? So that was really interesting to me. And once I'd realized that Jeannie and Julius are in this situation, you know, I wanted to write more about that.
And I was going to say, there was a movie that has gotten quite a bit of critical acclaim also that here in the United States, I'm not sure if you caught it, but it was Nomadland.
I haven't seen it yet, but I do really want to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have heard about it.
That kind of covers some of the same ideas, at least. But, you know, it's a very interesting time. And yeah, it's certainly thought-provoking, to say the least.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
But yeah, I was going to talk a little bit more about creativity with you and your productivity, but and we've kind of delved into the origin of Unsettled Ground. Maybe talk a little bit about the process now that you've written four novels and you're probably chewing on a fifth. What's next for you, and kind of like how do you prepare yourself to get those pages or you know, get into a new novel?
For me, once that idea has come, so with Unsettled Ground, the caravan in the woods, that I don't really spend very much time thinking about it. Once I've finished the previous novel, then I don't allow particularly any thinking time or any planning or plotting time. I really just start writing, and on my laptop start seeing what will happen and where things will go. So I don't have any idea about what this novel is about, who the characters are, what the situation is, what the dynamics are. I just start writing and something will happen in that first scene, obviously, or the first chapter, and there will be some consequences from that, and possibly a number of consequences that I could choose from. And it feels like, you know, I might choose one and then I write another scene and there are consequences from that. And that's really how I move through my process of writing, without any idea of what is coming next. So for me, it feels incredibly painfully slow, and I don't like doing it. I have to make myself write with all sorts of little tricks. You know, I can't have lunch unless I've written another 100 words or whatever it is. But what I really love is the editing and the revision. And I would do that all day, every day, if I could, without actually creating any new words. So my rule to myself is that in every writing session, whether that's 10 minutes or whether it's a whole day, I'm only allowed to edit what I wrote in the previous session, and I must write some new words. Doesn't matter how many, it could be 5, it could be 500, or it's never going to be 5,000 for me. It's very slow for me. But so that the novel does grow. And then maybe it takes me a year and a half to get to the end of what I might call the first draft, although it has been edited a little bit as I've gone along. And I'm in a writing group, so I send them work as I'm writing. Every month we meet and they have a chapter or so. So I get some feedback also as I'm going along, and I might make those changes. And then after that year and a half, when finally I get to the end and I can say, oh, so that's what this book is about. And those are the themes, and that's the subject, and these are the problems. You know, there's obviously lots of problems and lots of revision that needs to be done. And then I spend, I don't know, 6 months to a year revising and editing. First of all, at quite a high level, so looking at plot and suspense and characters and also, you know, all those kind of high level things, if you like, and moving bits of the text around. And then I get into a finer and finer and finer detail until finally I'm really examining is every word the right word in the right place, and reading it aloud to myself over and over and over so that I can hear the rhythm of it. So that's how it normally works. But I liked your adjective, chewing on a new novel. It does feel like, really feels like that.
Well, I was going to try to draw the parallel between the sculpture work and your artwork. It seems like that, you know, it sounds kind of like a similar process. You're kind of just starting out with a raw chunk of stone and then just slowly, you know, kind of whittling. You don't know what it's going to be right out of the gate. You've just got this, you know, you're just starting to carve this, the uncarved block, so to speak, to use.
Yeah, it is like that. Yeah. It is like that. I might have a vague idea, you know, well, partly it's based on the shape of the stone. So, you know, what would I like to carve? What things have I been looking at? What shapes? And then I would start carving. And if something doesn't work, or there's some flaw in the stone, or I don't know, I get distracted, or you know, literally a nose falls off or something, then I have to rework it. And writing is quite like that for me. It is very organic. And if something doesn't work, or I reach a dead end, I have to backtrack and rewrite or lift something out. And it's very sculptural. It is. Yeah. Mm. Quite interesting, that.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, I was going to say, there are certainly textures and kind of a distinct, I want to say a grain to your work that's quite fascinating. And it seems that your background as an artist lends to that.
Yeah, I think it probably does. And also, although I'm not a painter, I have done a lot of drawing in the past, so I think I probably have quite a visual mind. And when I write, I can see the scene unrolling in front of me in my mind's eye as if it's a film, and so I'm writing it down. So I do see it very visually as I'm writing.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I mean, I've heard writers say that, you know, or describe fiction as, you know, as a dream that you're kind of sharing, a shared dream, but of course, and dreams are very, as you mentioned about novels, you know, they're very subjective. Each reader brings their own, you know, canvas of their mind, or, you know, maybe I'm stretching this a little too far, but no, I think, I'm absolutely, I was seeing, as you were describing that, I was kind of seeing your writing process. It was very interesting. Well, how do you feel about the cover of Unsettled Ground? It's a beautiful cover, I think.
Oh, it's so beautiful, isn't it? And that is actually a painting by Valerie Hegarty. Well, a sculpture, really. And it's a frame with some flowers painted in it. Mm-hmm. And then the actual roots come out. So it's a photograph of her sculpture. And yeah, they've done an amazing job, Tin House. It's very, very beautiful. I think, yeah, it's quite arresting.
Yeah. Congrats. Yeah. Congrats on the work. Good stuff. Well, of course, I will link to your home base there, all the other social media places, and we'll keep an eye on the Women's Prize for Fiction as that advances. It's got to be an exciting time for you.
You know, it'd be lovely to win, but if I don't win, I just really want to be able to go to the party.
Yeah, of course.
To buy a frock and go to the party.
Well, that should be very fun. We'll keep an eye on that. I will link to that website as well, and the book, of course. Listeners, where else do you want to connect before we kind of wrap up here with a couple last questions? Where else do you want to connect with listeners? I think I got most of it.
I think you have. Yeah. Instagram is where I hang out most of the time on social media.
Cool.
Fine.
Those are great. I love it. I'll link to the Instagram. Check out the what are we calling these? The book breakfast?
Oh, yeah. Claire's Books at Breakfast, I think it is.
I think you have a feature in another medium. I'm not sure what it would be, but Claire's Books at Breakfast.
Oh, I'm not sure either.
Could be a TV program. Cool. So a fun one for you. If you could have dinner with any author from any era, to your favorite restaurant in the world, all expenses paid, who would you take and where would you take them?
I think I would quite like to take Shirley Jackson, because if we weren't treated very well, I think she would talk her mind, and she would make sure that they snapped to it. And I can imagine her like that. But I think she'd also be really fascinating. You know, I'd love to talk about her writing process. She would be a good one. And where would I go? I have been to America quite a few times and been to some amazing restaurants, a vegetarian restaurant in New York. But can I remember the name of it? No, I cannot remember, but I'll go for that one with Shirley Jackson. Although I think Shirley Jackson would be a carnivore. I really think she'd be a meat eater. So maybe we could slip in a little steak for her. I don't know.
All right. we'll have a private room where we'll cater it. And I'm sure they'll make us cook the steak in a separate kitchen.
Yeah, sure they probably would. She'd have to bring her own knife and fork too.
That's right. They're very particular about the steak touching the forks. Perfect. Well, do you just have any final pearl of wisdom for your peers and fellow scribes, and just kind of how to keep their chins up during, you know, times of adversity?
It can be hard, but this probably isn't going to help, but it doesn't. Maybe it does help. It doesn't get any easier. So you've just got to push through it. You've just got to keep writing. And when you reach that moment in the middle of the book that everybody does, where you're thinking, no one's going to read this, this is rubbish, I should go and start another project, I'm not interested in this anymore, you've just got to push through that feeling and keep going, because I think everybody feels it. Yeah.
Push through the dip.
Yes.
To get to the other side. And then the good stuff starts to happen in the revision process. We really appreciate your time and wisdom. Congratulations on the work and all of your successes. And hopefully you'll come back and visit us again in the future.
That would be lovely. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.